A decade ago, Lou Lucas was working as the medical director of a hospice in the Baltimore area when she took part in one of the very first trials of psilocybin-assisted therapy. This was with two of the pioneering researchers at Johns Hopkins, Roland Griffiths and Bill Richards. So there was an initial screening, several sessions of preparation, and finally, a glass of water and a capsule.
I just noticed my peripheral vision changing a little bit. As if things were just a little bit glittery. And I said, "I think it's happening now, Bill." And he said, "All righty, it's time to put on your eye shades." And I put on my headphones and I laid back on this couch and everything changed. I felt like I was moving on a conveyor belt into a jungle, and what it was leading to was a huge wasp.
A wasp?
A wasp. And I'm like, oh, I'm going into a wasp. And then things changed again. One of the pieces of guidance that Roland in particular gave me, he's like, "This is a medicine that when you take it, it's going to change the way you perceive the world. So all of the ways that you have perceived the world, this medicine takes that apart." As that happens, your mind's going to try to tell you a story. It's going to conjure up something terrifying. If you read the ancient literature, it's like people would see demons or dragons. He said, modern people don't see demons and dragons. Modern people tend to think either you're going to die or you're going to go crazy. And what I'll tell you is just let it happen. If you fight it, you will lose. And if you run, it will chase you.
It's sounding more and more like one of my worst nightmares.
Well, it has that characteristic about it. Everything that you've understood about you is dissolving. Every once in a while, there would be a window, and through the window, I could see scenes of my life that were horribly boring and mundane and pedestrian, just being crushed with boredom of like, your life is nothing. Your life is just this maze and you can't get out of it. I'm like, no, I can get out of here. I can get out of here. And a voice is just laughing. You can't get out of here. It's like, no, I can get out of here. I'm going to study at Johns Hopkins. And this voice saying, you know, this just evil, demonic laugh. You are not at a study at Johns Hopkins. This is your life. This is all there is and there will never be anything. No, there has to be more than this. I'll lose my mind. And with that, I remember Roland saying, if you feel like you're going crazy, go crazy. And I went, oh, I'm going crazy. And the next second, I was backstroking through this beautiful bioluminescent subterranean cave. I was in a lagoon in this subterranean cave, and I was backstroking through this beautiful landscape. And that's when the real deal happened. That's when I crossed over. And from then on, it was scene after scene of illumination. I was in the fullness of the universe. Like the Buddhists talk about the boundless abodes. On the outside, it was about a 6-hour trip. On the inside, it could have been forever. And in fact, at times felt like forever.
Today, 10 years later, Lou Lucas is a palliative medicine physician and an advocate for psychedelic-assisted therapy, especially for patients like hers, people who are near the end of life and scared. walk me through how this works? I mean, normally when somebody is referred to you, some other doctor has said, there's nothing more we can do for you.
So I get involved a little bit before the nothing more we can do for you. And often another doctor has said, this person has an illness that's going to take their life. And we don't know exactly how long it's going to be, but how the rest of that life goes is going to depend upon the decisions they make. And so I sit with people and help them understand what their body is doing and why this illness is causing issues, how that illness is going to impact their ability to meet their hopes and dreams and to live into their lives, and then to help them sort through what kinds of choices in terms of treatment are available. And there are some times when there are treatments that will be helpful and they are congruent with this person's goals. And there are times when the treatments either won't be helpful or the life it leaves them with won't allow them to achieve those goals and they might not want those treatments.
Is there an example that comes to...
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a good one. So I had a patient recently. When I asked him what was important in his life, he told me that his wife had died 10 years ago and that he'd been longing for her for all of that 10 years. And we talked about this illness. He said, thank God, you know, God has finally called me home. And I don't want to treat this. I want to go be with my wife. There are lots of people who don't have the calmness and clarity to deal with that, but it might be the same desire. They don't want to. They just get stuck on the merry-go-round of medical treatment.
And probably no idea. I mean, so many questions. What's it like? What's going to happen? Does anything, is it just like a match blows out? That's it?
Well, you know, what's interesting, Anne, is that you talk about that and you have the natural curiosity of a journalist. What happens to most people is that they're so frightened, they can't even be curious. And then they start to shut down. They become depressed. They become anxious. And we start scheduling them for medical treatment. So whatever time they do have, they're in treatment that may or may not work, but we haven't questioned whether we can stop treatment because they're too terrified to think about the possibility. And so we're in this cycle of we lose a sense of meaning. We get trapped into clinging on to this life, no matter what it means, even if it means I'm spending 3 days a week going through treatment and not spending time with my family. And in the end, nobody gets out of here alive, right?
Yeah.
You know, we've got a deadline in life. And what do I need to do? What gifts do I need to leave to my family? How do I think about passing on some of my wisdom? How do I think about really going out with some joy and some curiosity and really being full of life? There are even people who talk about like an ecstatic grief of this life that we're living is so precious and so sacred, but it's only in that time when you realize that it's short, that there's not that much of it, that you feel like the beauty and the magnificence of it. And if you can help to convey that to people, wow, look at this gift we're sharing. Look at the intimacy we're able to have now, just because I realize time is short and I don't have that much more time to hold your hand.
You must be a very unusual palliative care physician because honestly, I don't think that most palliative care physicians go into such depth. I think it's more focused on, okay, so maybe we add some more morphine.
You know, given the opportunity, most palliative doctors would go into similar territory, I think. And I teach residents and fellows, and there's a sense of, well, what am I here to do? It's like, if you don't talk to people about this, who is?
Yeah.
Because even if they have a trusted spiritual advisor, their trusted spiritual advisor doesn't know what's going on with their body. Their pastor doesn't have any idea how sick they are. And if you don't broach this with them, it's like, you know, we're keeping you patched together now, but this might not last. If you don't initiate those conversations of how are we making meaning out of your life, they're never going to connect with their pastor in a different way. And so our ability to reclaim some of that, the shamanic origins of medicine, of how do we help people bridge this gap? And not every doctor needs to do this. Some people should be quite technical. You want your surgeon to have precise technical skills, but we need more doctors and more healthcare providers who can bridge that gap. Physicians who are called to this edge walking that I think about, when you've got one foot in the medical world and one foot in the psycho-spiritual world.
The FDA has not approved psilocybin for medical use, so you cannot now say to a patient, you know, I think you would be a great candidate for psychedelic therapy. But you do have some studies, right, that you're thinking about.
Exactly. And I'm doing a trial of a psilocybin protocol for people who have distress related to pancreas cancer. And as you probably know, pancreas cancer is one of the most lethal of the solid organ cancers.
So it's a really terrifying one, or one of them.
It is. And most people who are diagnosed are diagnosed very far along. And we can give people a couple months usually, but not a whole lot longer than that. Some people might live a year and a half. You can imagine being told this.
Wow.
And so people who are at our cancer center being treated for their pancreas cancer will be offered admission into this study. We'll take them through this period of about 6 to 8 hours of preparatory counseling, a day-long dosing session, and then several sessions of integration afterwards.
I guess what I'm wondering is, what is the experience like for somebody who does have a terminal illness to take psilocybin?
Yeah.
What changes? The day after, how do they feel? And the day after that, and the day after that, what's different?
It's phenomenal. People say a few different things. First, somewhere between 60 and 80% of people have profound experiences that dramatically change their life and their perception of their illness, which is remarkable because nothing else works like this. And it isn't even the next day, Anne. When they're finished with this, when they kind of come back into consensus reality and they're talking to you, they just look at you like, that was amazing. It's as if you've built your reality on this house of cards of all the stories that you have about yourself. Oh, you know, life is hard and then you die and I've got this cancer and I'm really worried and I can't get myself out of it and I'm scared and every time I feel a bump, I think the cancer's going on. If that's what you came in with and then they just blow, you go through this experience and that whole house of cards of stories just gets washed away. I witnessed one patient just say like, all that anxiety I felt, it's just stories. I can get a different story. I don't need that story. And then to have that sense of, oh, that worry, I don't have to be that worried. Yeah, I've got cancer, but I don't need to be that worried about it.
Are they less afraid of dying?
There's a wonderful story. Anderson Cooper captured it on 60 Minutes. And this woman who was in the study 3 years earlier and who just before the interview, she was diagnosed with brain mets. So she was actively getting worse. And she looked at him and said, I don't say I'm happy. I say I'm comfortable. I spent my whole life being anxious and I'm comfortable. I'm not afraid to live. I'm not afraid to die. I'm just comfortable. And she kind of giggles. And this is 3 years after her psilocybin experience. Hmm. And underneath it all, what people report is love. And just this sense of like, I've been in the presence of love. And maybe if we were dropping the stories that we need, like to get through our world, we need a certain level of defense, right? Like it's a hard world. Mm-hmm. And we put defenses up to keep ourselves physically safe and emotionally safe. And so if we were able to let some of those defenses down, maybe we would have more access to love. And if we have that, then you can really accept a lot of things.
Wow. You know, this does raise the question, why do people have to wait until they're dying? I imagine some of the terminally ill patients must say, darn, if I'd only had this revelation, you know, 30, 40 years ago, I might have lived differently.
Well, exactly. And for most people, you would use it like a sacrament. And in indigenous cultures, we see that this is often a rite of passage, that when you come into adulthood is the first time you would use this. And then perhaps when you got married, or perhaps before a child, or perhaps every decade, or every, you know, whatever the right interval is, you just touch back down and recognize, sometimes I'm my individual within my community, but I remember that I'm connected to everything. And it's almost like a ritual bath, like a mikvah in Judaism. Perhaps there's this time when I take a psychedelic bath and I remember like, oh, I'm going to wash myself in the universe. I'm going to immerse myself in the unconscious mind. I'm going to feel that expanse of consciousness and realize that I'm part of everything. And then I'm going to come back and do the laundry and change the diapers. And if you could just wake up a little bit more frequently and remember like, oh, there's more than just this little life that I'm leading. My life is lovely and there's more.
Lou Lucas is a professor of palliative medicine at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. You can learn more about her clinical practice at palliadelic.org.